Welcome back to Insight with Beth Ruyak on Capital Public Radio. I'm Beth Duncan in for Beth Ruyak. Survivors of the Camp Fire are in urgent need of medical care. Groups of doctors, nurses, and students from UC Davis Health are volunteering their time in Butte County, where they are treating thousands of evacuees for everything from wounds and asthma to the norovirus that has broken out at some shelters. Joining us in studio today is Anthony F. Durant. He is the chair of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at UC Davis Health. Tony, welcome to Insight.
Thank you.
Also joining us today is Shannon Watson. Shannon is a student in the Physician Assistant Program at UC. She's also a registered nurse, a public health nurse, and a longtime disaster relief volunteer and former Butte County resident as well. Shannon, welcome.
Thank you.
Tony, starting with you, tell us about the challenges of setting up an emergency medical care center right in the middle of a disaster area. You know, sometimes it's a gym or a church or a parking lot. How do you do that?
Well, Shannon's actually very well positioned to describe some more about that, but I would say that it's a huge undertaking. It's obviously always happening at a time of great chaos. There are physical challenges, and I think the biggest challenges are human challenges. You know, these are the local community physicians and healthcare workers were also affected by this fire. So you need to mobilize people from all over the region. And that's one of the reasons why UC Davis has been very much wanting to be involved and has been involved with this effort.
Shannon, for a lot of people, that would be overwhelming. How do you begin to organize and get something like that set up?
It's incredibly hard. The people that are setting up these shelters, aside from Red Cross and public health, these pop-up shelters specifically, are people that have lost their homes themselves. So they have just faced a crisis and in that have to immediately turn around to take care of their community and these patients and then mobilize setting up a clinic, which means calling churches, calling places where there's a gymnasium to use, mobilizing the medical resources, making sure that there's food, that there's clothing, that there's donations, that there's volunteers, that it's an entire process.
And Tony, which evacuees are being treated? There was a lot of people that have left, have found other places to be, but many that have not. So which evacuees are under your care?
Right. Well, so there's people that have illnesses, but they're not necessarily sick enough to be in the hospital, which, of course, is overwhelmed in that area, or we're not sick enough to need to be evacuated here to the medical center. So it includes people with chronic conditions, many of them things like diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease. They're folks who were cut off from their medications when they experienced the fire. Fortunately, there have been the local hospital has been donating medications and supplies, and others have been bringing in supplies. But they need to have these medicines administered. They need to have their blood pressure monitored. There is some minor wound care. There has been outbreaks also of illnesses such as norovirus, which is an intestinal bug that requires often IV fluids. So there's lots of different needs. And the key thing to emphasize is these are going to be ongoing for quite a while for many of these folks because they don't have a lot of resources and they're going to rely on volunteers and volunteer efforts to be able to get by this difficult period.
The norovirus, highly contagious. How do you isolate people in a situation like that?
Well, I think that you do the best you can, and what some of our physicians who have been up and back have been saying is that initially it was a little rocky, but they gradually start to get those folks isolated in one section of the shelter. They start to make sure everybody's using good sterile, technique or at least hand washing technique to prevent spread. And again, IV fluids and keeping people hydrated is one of the key things, especially older folks that can be very, very dangerous if they get dehydrated.
Shannon, the campfire disaster must be especially personal for you since you are from Butte County.
Yes.
So what prompted you to become a part of this effort, and what is the culture of that environment like now as people are struggling?
Well, my prompt first came from Red Cross when I got the call because the wildfire had broken out. So early Thursday morning, Red Cross contacted me and said, we need nurses up here. And I was not able to go that day, and so I had to go over the weekend. And I had received a call from some fellow nurses that I used to work with at Feather River Hospital. And they said, we have a lot of patients that need medical care. We're going to start our own pop-up shelter clinic. Mm-hmm. There's 250 people here. Can you come? of course, that is the community that raised me to be a nurse. It's the community that taught me what emergency response truly is, and it was just instinctual. I needed to be there. Those are.
And you've served in other disaster areas, so tell me, how does this one differ from the other situations that you have served in and have helped take care of people?
This differs in the population that it affected and the scale that it affected. There is not going to be an end to this. Just because the fire is out, this is not over. There are many, many people missing still. There are many who lost their lives, and the town itself is going to be extremely hard to rebuild if that's possible. And so the magnitude of this disaster is just unprecedented. It's not like anything I've ever seen before.
Do you think paradise will be paradise again?
With the response that's come out of the community, potentially. That is the part that I can take hope in. It will be a long time before that is a viable option, however.
I'm talking with Anthony F. Durant. He is the chair of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at UC Davis Health, and Shannon Watson, a student in the Physician Assistant Program at UC. And we're talking, of course, about the health of campfire survivors. Tony, how do you go about signing up volunteers, and how do you make sure that they are the right people to be in that situation?
Right. Well, at a local level, we have, through the department chairs and our vice chancellor and dean, we've been putting out the word to mobilize clinicians from UC Davis. And I should say that not only has it been wonderful, the response from clinicians that want to go up there and have been up there in many cases, but also people making accommodations to allow that to happen, people working double shifts or people covering other people's clinics, those types of things to allow that to happen. As far as the vetting effort, that has been happening up there where the Red Cross and the Public Health Department and others have been making sure that, for example, these are licensed physicians who are qualified to take care of patients. We've been focusing on primary care clinicians in particular, because, such as from my own department, because they are broadly trained. They're able to do lots of different things. However, there is an emerging, I think, serious need for mental health care, some of it which will go beyond the general mental health care training that we have had as family physicians. And I think that's going to be a really important need as people sort of fully process what has happened. There'll be PTSD and other issues that psychiatrists, I think, and other mental health professionals will be very important. Shannon was also mentioning an emerging need for social workers as well, because people are now at that stage of what am I going to do going forward. So it's a matter of knowing what the common problems are that you see in a disaster situation like this, and making sure that the clinicians you have up there are able to provide those, meet those needs. Excuse me.
And how does this all relate to community medicine? Does it have to do with the fact that some of those people who've lost everything are in those fields of mental health and psychology and social work?
Yeah, that's sort of what earlier on, as I mentioned, you know, that there is now apparently some mobilization of the local healthcare providers in the area, but obviously they were reeling initially as well, and many have lost what they had. And so that's, again, why I think a regional response and really a statewide response is so important to these types of disasters, because this is a time when people in the community need to focus on getting well themselves, ideally.
Shannon, you bring with you a special set of skills, administrative skills, and you've been able to locate people who were listed as missing. Can you talk a little bit about that, what your approach is to that very sensitive assignment?
Yeah, so I also want to point out that the only reason I was really able to do that was because we had enough nursing coverage that day that allowed me that time. So the volunteer aspect was crucial in giving me the ability to then go take care of the missing list. I pulled together a team, and we sat in a room for probably about 7 hours and pored over thousands of names. Everyone who had come into the shelter, who had stopped by as a visitor, that we had had a note on, we checked medical records, and I cross-checked every single name that we had, including nicknames, misspellings, etc., and in doing so was able to locate 12 of the missing.
In this process, are you also finding people on that list were previously deceased? Their families didn't realize it, but, you know, their grandmother or whomever died and they were not aware, as well as obviously victims of that fire. But I'm sure there's a lot of things that you're finding when you're looking at names of people that are missing.
There are. And that is not one that I've come across myself, but that I have heard of happening. There's reasons across the board for people that are listed on the missing list, and some will turn up inevitably in shelters and have fled somewhere.
Sure.
And they just haven't contacted anyone. But yes, some are deceased. And yeah.
And do you get information from people, they might be friends or relatives, that have kind of been living off the grid? It's a very rural area. And so it's a very difficult situation to really track them down because they weren't really part of perhaps the community in that way.
Absolutely. For example, I had a woman at the shelter who we had been interacting with for an entire week. I knew her name and that she was there. I just never knew that she was on the missing list. And come to find out, when I had asked her why she hadn't contacted family, it was because she had never owned a cell phone before and she didn't know how to use it. She was given one from AT&T in this crisis. They had pulled up a van and given her one to use, and she didn't know how to unlock the phone screen because we're dealing with an elderly population who is not skilled in using mobile devices. This is kind of a new problem.
Not a high-tech group.
Exactly.
In some cases. Well, Shannon and Tony, I think you both have addressed this a little bit, but if we could go just a little bit deeper, can we talk about the short-term crisis versus the long-term healthcare issues? And as you said, this is a long recovery process. I mean, there's nothing left for so many people. So how do you go about this now in terms of what's going to be happening 6 months now from now or a year from now? Tony, would you like to start?
Right. Well, I think the key is, again, to continue to get the word out regionally and across the state, because I think there is a natural tendency that once this inevitably starts to fade a little bit from the news, there's this feeling that it's taken care of. But that is actually, we were talking a little bit before the show, one of the most difficult parts of any recovery effort, because people can then be out of mind. So I think it is making sure that, for example, in our health system and others, that we keep this at the top of our list of important things, that we continue to make sure that we check in with people in Butte County and try to meet their needs for volunteers, not just in the first few days, but over the next weeks and probably months. And that will take more than just our health system, by the way. I think it needs to be a very broad effort with all people and systems that provide healthcare contributing.
Shannon.
Yeah, I agree with that completely. The need for surrounding communities to step up to help this community is essential. As time goes on, they aren't going to have primary care docs to go back to. They're not going to have the hospital to go back to. They're not going to have their typical community resources that they were used to, right? If they go to dialysis every week and the dialysis center burned, how are they going to meet that need in the next 6 months? So things like that are what we have to start gearing towards addressing and mobilizing volunteers here to help meet that need up there so that Butte County and the medical professionals there and the volunteers there on the ground aren't so overwhelmed as really needed.
A lot of record keeping. So you can do follow-up on individuals, a lot of individuals, a lot of people. Is that proving to be a difficult task?
I think the key is you in a situation like this, you tend to provide the care, and the documentation does sometimes come second. I would imagine there is a lot of challenge in making sure, though, that there's a good documentation trail. And that should get a little bit easier and more systematic that is one thing about the immediate crisis being over. There's a little bit more time to think about those kinds of things. But first and foremost is providing the care.
I know this is not specifically your area, but of course a critical issue is housing. Any indication of where these folks may go?
I have seen many of them be absorbed, obviously, into the surrounding areas. Red Bluff, Redding, Chico, Oroville, Yuba City, places like that. They are going also places like Auburn, so a little bit further. But there are some people that are taking this opportunity to just up and leave. They don't want to go back. They don't want to rebuild. There's a lot of trauma there, and they would rather start over somewhere new. So I've heard of some going out of state, maybe moving somewhere they've always wanted to go, and that's they're kind of taking this opportunity to do that.
And that might be, too, because of the age of the population. A lot of people retired to paradise.
Exactly.
To enjoy the lifestyle. Mm-hmm. So they'll be looking for something different, perhaps.
Yeah.
I appreciate both of you being with us today, and thank you for your efforts up there in helping these people that are really struggling. You are listening to Anthony F. Durant. He is, again, the chair of the Department of Family and Community Medicine at UC Davis Health, and Shannon Watson. She's a student in the Physician Assistant Program at UC Davis. She's also a registered nurse and a very committed disaster relief worker. So we thank you both for being on Insight today. And we have more on our website at capradio.org/insight. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, Capital Public Radio.